Welcome to our podcast. I'm Frank Long, Editorial Director of Rehab Management and Physical Therapy Products. During this program, we're going to find out what's new with pressure injury, terminology, etiology, and wheelchair cushion choice. To help us learn more, we're speaking with Elizabeth Cole, Director of Clinical Applications at Roho. Elizabeth was trained as a physical therapist and has extensive experience in seating and positioning. She has consulted about Medicare policy and reimbursement, lectured extensively at conferences and universities worldwide, and currently Elizabeth is a member of ResNA's Professional Standards Board. Elizabeth, it's a pleasure to have you join us.
Thank you, Frank.
In April 2016, the National Pressure Ulcer Advisory Panel released updates to their terminology related to skin breakdown. Elizabeth, can you describe some of these changes and their significance?
Sure. So these are changes that were developed during a consensus meeting of about 400 experts in the field, and they're basically changes in how we define and categorize pressure injury. So to start with, you might have noticed that I used the word pressure injury instead of pressure ulcer, which is the old term, and pressure injury is the term that they now recommend. This might seem like a minor difference, but it's actually pretty significant because pressure injury more accurately describes all the different stages of soft tissue damage. So when we look at the old term, pressure ulcer, it's really more descriptive of an open injury, and that would definitely apply to stage 3 and stage 4 wounds, maybe some stage 2 wounds, some of the ones that are open ulcers. But when we think of stage 1s, and actually many of the deep tissue pressure injuries, the skin is intact, so there's no open ulcer. This doesn't mean that it should be minimized or these injuries should receive less attention than ones with open ulcers, so they decided to change to pressure injury because it's actually more appropriate to describe all the stages of damage, so even when the skin is intact. So that was one pretty significant change, even though it doesn't sound like it. Another change was in the definition itself of pressure injury. So first of all, it now does specifically say that it can include intact skin or it can be an open wound. Like the former definition, it does say that it can occur over a bony prominence, but it also now says that it can be, and this is a quote, related to a medical device or other device. So, in other words, when we use the term pressure injury, this could also apply to tissue damage caused, you know, if you have some kind of therapeutic or diagnostic device and it creates pressure and causes tissue injury. And we can categorize this using the same staging system that we use when we talk about the tissue damage that we characteristically see under a bony prominence. Another difference is that the new definition clearly states that factors like moisture, heat buildup, so kind of what we call microclimate, nutrition, circulation, comorbidities, even the condition of the soft tissue can decrease the tissue's tolerance to pressure and shear. And I think this is significant because the old definition basically indicated that there were other factors that might be associated with pressure injury, but it stated that their significance hadn't really been clarified. And I think for those of us who have worked with pressure injury spheres, we know that these other kind of risk factors are very important and can contribute sometimes significantly to the development of pressure injuries. So I think it's important that that's spelled out here. And my hope is that they'll someday actually be included in clinical criteria. So for instance, Medicare's criteria for like skin protection cushions. When we look at the definitions of the stages, so the stages one through four and deep tissue pressure injury, they all have some changes, but I think that probably the ones that stand out to me the most are stage one and deep tissue pressure injury. So first of all, when we look at stage one, it used to say that stage one indicated the person is at risk. And they actually eliminated that verbiage. And to me, this clarifies that we do see that persistent or non-blanchable redness that's characteristic of the stage one, that it's not just an indication of risk that, hey, you know, we've got an actual pressure injury here and we need to pay attention. So I think it kind of takes away that sort of, oh, this person's, you know, at risk. They certainly are at risk for further damage, but we have a definite injury here. And then it also states that some symptoms could be some other symptoms besides the characteristic non-blanchable redness could actually happen before we see the visible evidence. So things like changes in sensation, changes in skin temperature, changes in the feel of the skin, they might actually be present even before we see the discoloration. So I think this tells me or leads me to say that, you know, hey, we need to pay attention not only to the discoloration, but kind of look at any changes that we see in the skin that we might have not really paid enough attention to. When we look at deep tissue pressure injury, that's another one where I think this important changes, and probably the biggest change is just the name itself. So the old name for this was suspected deep tissue injury, and now the new name is deep tissue pressure injury. So they took out the word suspected, and I think that's pretty significant because I think that, to me, that there's a real clear consensus that these injuries do exist and we should approach them accordingly. So as soon as we see the first signs, we need to pay immediate attention, provide treatment, avoid that kind of wait-and-see approach because it's not just suspected anymore. And it also clarifies, and this kind of goes along with the definition of pressure injury, that deep tissue pressure injury could be intact skin and it's not necessarily an open wound. And it also clarifies where this kind of occurs. It clarifies that it's at the bone-muscle interface. So the old definition used to say it was damage of underlying soft tissue, and now the new definition clarifies this happens at the bone-muscle interface.
Can you talk a little more about deep tissue pressure injuries? Specifically, what makes them different from the other stages?
Sure. Yeah, there's definitely more discussion and attention to them these days because, as I said earlier, we realize they can be very dangerous. Unfortunately, there were probably a lot of times in the past when they were mistaken for stage ones because typically no open wound to begin with. So you just see the persistent non-blanchable discoloration of the skin. So I think there were a lot of cases when they were treated as less serious and there wasn't enough attention paid to them. But we now know that the discoloration is typically more the deep red, maroon, or purple, sort of like a deep bruising rather than the sort of pinkish or lighter red of the stage one. And if we see that discoloration, it's more likely to be a closed deep tissue pressure injury. And the other thing, as I alluded to before, is that it's kind of the difference is where they begin. So most of us have been taught that pressure injuries begin superficially on the, you know, in the epidermis and they progress downward through the deeper tissues. So, you know, if you have continued pressure, they begin as a stage one and then the damage progresses down into the dermis and that typically is stage two. Then it progresses into the underlying tissue and we now have a stage three. And finally, when you get down into that deeper muscle tissue, it becomes a stage four. So it's progressing from the outside in. With deep tissue pressure injuries, they begin in the deepest tissues and they progress outward. So this is very different because by the time we actually see the visible damage, we've got a lot of damage in underlying layers, which is very different from when we start seeing the discoloration with a stage one. It's just the outer layers. So I kind of see deep tissue injuries as like an iceberg. You know, what we see on the surface is really nothing compared to what lies below.
Is there a difference in how we should address a deep tissue pressure injury versus a stage one pressure injury?
Yeah, definitely. Typically, when we identify a pressure injury as stage one, we, you know, look for the cause and hopefully and remove the cause. And then, you know, treat conservatively, monitor the skin, make sure that the redness goes away and make sure it doesn't progress. But with a deep tissue pressure injury, it's critical that as soon as we see it, we treat it as a major wound. because again, by the time we see the discoloration, we've got a lot of damage that's already occurred in the underlying tissues. And I think, as I said earlier, if we just treat conservatively and we don't take aggressive actions in sometimes as short as a day or two, it will open up. And basically now we've got a stage four, and you know, we, in the past, before we kind of knew what was happening, how this progressed, we're, you know, kind of scratching our heads saying, how did this happen? You know, how did we go from a stage one to a stage four in such a short period of time? And unfortunately, I think a lot of times it got blamed on bad care. And it was really just due to a sort of mischaracterization of the injury. So if we see that deep discoloration, we need to treat it immediately as a very serious wound versus that kind of wait-and-see approach.
Pressure injuries are now attributed to cell deformation as well as ischemia. Can you explain the difference between these two pathways of injury?
So most of us who've been involved working with pressure injuries and wounds for any length of time, we learn that pressure causes tissue damage by interfering with blood flow, so as you said, ischemia. So basically in this pathway, the pressure, either with or without shear, compresses and occludes the capillaries, there's a lack of oxygen to the cell, waste products accumulate, and then the result is cell death or necrosis. And this is definitely still a valid theory for how pressure injuries occur. We still know that there is some damage due to ischemia. But we've also become aware of another pathway, and that's cell deformation. So in this pathway, you have pressure and shear, and it instead of causing compression of the capillaries or the blood vessels, it actually causes deformation in the cells. And when that happens, the cell membrane gets stretched and its permeability is changed. So now we've got things leaking out of the cell that really need to stay in the cell, and we've got things coming into the cell that really need to stay out. So what you end up with is sort of this disruption of the internal balance in the cell and a toxic environment. So it's actually the deformation of the cell and the membrane and then the resulting toxic environment within the cell that causes cell death. And the cool thing about this, they've been able to demonstrate this in the laboratories in some recent studies where they've actually been able to create bioengineered artificial muscle tissue and grow this muscle tissue in the lab. It has all the properties of living muscle tissue, except it has no blood vessels. So it gets all the nutrients and oxygens from the growth culture. But when they applied pressure to the tissues, cell death occurred. And so they knew that this was not due to ischemia because there were no blood vessels present, but it had to be from the actual compression of the tissue cells themselves. And they've gone on to, some of the researchers have gone on to show this actually at a cellular level as well.
It seems that even though the pathway itself is different, the end result is the same. So what is the significance of cell deformation in relationship to wheelchair sitting?
Yes, it is true. It's true that the cause is the same, and that the pressure, with or without shear, or shear itself, and the end result's the same, so you have tissue death or cell death, but the big difference is how long it takes for the damage to occur. So when we look at ischemia, it takes about 6 to 8 hours before the ischemia is going to cause significant tissue death. And I think a good example of this is what happens when you put a tourniquet on a damaged limb. You know, you put the tourniquet on, you're basically cutting off the circulation, but if you take the tourniquet off within a certain amount of time, hours, within a few hours, the blood flow can resume and often the limb can be saved. But what they found with tissue deformation in some of these studies in the laboratory is that this can actually occur in minutes, so minutes to a few hours. So it really is a much faster pathway of damage. And so we now know that some of these pressure injuries can occur in a much shorter period of time compared to what we saw when we were just talking about ischemia.
How does all of this affect our choice of a wheelchair cushion?
We know now that deep tissue pressure injuries begin at the bone-muscle interface, and we know that by the time we see the visible evidence of them, we've got significant damage. Now we also know from studies that the damage from cell deformation can occur in a very short period of time. So I think that this really should tell us, or maybe validate for us, that really anyone who's sitting for any length of time without moving is at risk for pressure injuries. So I think, first of all, we have to be extremely vigilant in inspecting the skin, paying attention to even some of the minor changes in the skin surface that we might not have paid attention to or as much attention to before, and particularly really paying attention for any of that sort of deep discoloration that might be from the deep tissue pressure injury. I think also, obviously, we need to choose seating interventions that really decrease the risk of tissue damage. And so looking at how can we relieve stress and strain on tissue to prevent particularly cell deformation and increase the maximum sitting time for someone. And we can look at one of the principles that we've all been taught over the years, and it's kind of a basic principle of physics, is that we want to increase the area over which the pressure is distributed. So in order to reduce peak pressures under those kind of more vulnerable areas at risk. So in other words, we want to take pressure away from the bony areas or decrease the pressure into the bony areas and redistribute it across the whole sitting surface. And one way for many years we've been doing this is through loading pressure onto the legs and then using materials that really allow the buttocks to immerse into the cushion, and allowing the cushion material to sort of envelop and accommodate the unique shape of the buttocks and the pelvis. And we actually, again, have some great research results and studies that have validated that, where researchers have used engineering principles and computations to show that immersion and envelopment really does reduce cell deformation, because it can create less stress and strain in the deep tissues where some of these really serious wounds develop. And so anytime we can decrease stress and strain, we can increase safe sitting time. So again, immersion and envelopment have been shown to be a very effective tool in that. But we also need to make sure that the cushion kind of changes with or sort of adapts to and adjusts to any changes that the person might go through over the years, since these cushions need to last now for like 5 years. So the cushion or the cushion material needs to adjust to changes like changes in body shape, increase or decrease body weight, change in body dimensions, changes even in tissue composition, which often happens with some of your progressive conditions or even traumatic injuries, even changes in sitting posture. So can the cushion actually adjust to those changes? And then also, can it adapt even to the small changes that occur on a daily basis, like when a person shifts their weight or shifts into different positions for comfort, or maybe they are moving around on the cushion during functional activities, or even just transfer differently onto the cushion. So I think basically a good cushion should definitely try to minimize the stresses and strains in the tissues, but it also should adjust and adapt to any of the long-term and short-term changes in order to continue to protect that person's skin over time with any of the normal changes that occur from that person's condition. And definitely the main goal is to sort of increase that safe sitting time.
We've been speaking with Elizabeth Cole, Director of Clinical Applications at Roho. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Frank, and I appreciate the opportunity and hope this was very helpful.